Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Easter when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you." You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed this scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they've given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Well, now in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School that we conduct twice a year here at the law school. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary. It's a commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Well, Easter's on the horizon. Easter's coming up. Easter's mentioned in the Bible, you know. So I thought, I got a letter the other day, kind of a rude, nasty letter, so I thought maybe I ought to mention something here about Easter. A guy wrote me a letter, and he really chided me. He castigated me, told me what a dummy I was. He said I couldn't calculate the Passover if my life depended on it, or words to those effects. And he said I was just in it for the money, and that I was a gold digger. And I don't know, he had four or five other kind of nasty comments to make, and so the wife, she got a little bummed out, and so she took his letter and threw it away and didn't answer it. But after she told me that story, I get a number of calls here at the law school. People ask questions, and they call up about this time of year, and they want to know how to calculate the Passover, or what's the difference between Easter and Passover, and why it is that Christians practice Easter and Jews practice Passover, and the Bible talks about the Passover, And there's only one place in the Bible that mentions the word Easter. It's in the King James Version in Acts 12, verse 4. And oftentimes I get these questions. And then when I get an email, oftentimes I have to sit down and take an hour to answer one. And we get about 30 calls a day. 30 calls a day times 30 days in a month is 900 calls a month. So if you're bummed out because I didn't answer your email, that's why. There just physically isn't enough hours in the day to answer them all, so I answer some. And if you send me an email or a letter and you keep it short and to the point, you know, if you get a long drawn out story, you know, about 5 pages long, and you want me to answer that, you know, I'm not going to do it. But if you ask one question on one piece of paper and I can answer that one question, yes or no, that goes pretty fast. I can sit there and read that, and I can answer that yes, and answer that no, and answer that yes, answer that no. But when we're talking about Passover and Easter over here, it takes a little bit more than that. And so I thought, well, let's take a few minutes, and let's answer the questions, and let's see if we can understand this process here, this program. It's actually a program, and the Passover is mentioned in the Bible 76 times. So if you were to go get a concordance, look up the word Passover, you'd find that it appears in the Bible 76 times. 28 times in the New Testament, 48 times in the Old Testament. Jesus practiced the Passover. He did not practice Easter. Easter wasn't thunk up until, or put into the Christian church, as we call it today, until about the 4th century A.D., Now, Easter's pretty old. Easter's been around for thousands of years. It goes back to the Babylonian mystery religion. So when you're practicing Easter, you're practicing the very popular Babylonian mystery religion. It's the most popular religion in the world today. In fact, everybody in the world practices it, no matter whether you call yourself a Muslim or a Christian or a pagan or an atheist or an agnostic or a communist. You're all practicing this ancient pagan practice, you know, in one form or another. Some people can go to church, you know, and pray and sing songs, and then other people, they stay out of church and they go into parades and buy clothes and things like that, you know. So people are practicing Easter. They just have different ways of doing it and different customs and different programs. In the Bible, it tells us not to practice these pagan holidays, not to learn the ways of the heathen around us. And so there's another program here in the Scripture. It's called the Passover. Now, typically, when we do Passover, people say, well, you must be Jewish. No, we're not Jewish at all. As a matter of fact, Jews don't practice the Passover. Jews observe Passover. There's a time of the year that they call Passover, and they observe it. But they do it on different days than are prescribed in the Scripture. And they do it in different ways than are outlined and mandated by the Scripture. So if you wanted to do the Passover the way God told us to do it, you'd have to go to Exodus chapter 12. And there are 52 steps to doing that. And the reason I say Jews observe it but don't practice it is that they don't do these 52 things. So just because you call it the Passover doesn't mean that you're practicing the Passover. Just that simple. Christians believe that Passover and Easter are synonymous terms and doesn't make any difference what you call it, and that they're practicing the Passover by calling it Easter, and they do their thing, whatever it is. But if you were to take a look at what you do, and it's your thing, and you compare that with Exodus chapter 12, you'll find that your thing isn't the same as God's thing, and so therefore it's something different. Now, God's a little bit picky. I don't know if you've ever noticed this before, but this God, I'm not talking about your God. I mean, your God's probably a pretty level-headed sort of fellow. This God is very, very picky, and he uses some wild terms. For instance, in Deuteronomy, let's go to Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and in Deuteronomy 12, verse 32, he says that we're not to add to or to take away from anything he says. Now, that's kind of a wild concept. And he says, now, when I tell you to stand up, then you stand up. When I tell you to sit down, then you sit down. When I tell you to shut up, you shut up. See, well, you know, religious people, especially Christians, they have a different take on that. They have a thing called freedom of religion. They wrote it right into their constitution here in this country so that everybody can kind of choose for himself how he wants to worship God or how he wants to practice holy days or one thing and another, and which holy days he's going to practice. And so I don't want to get in the way of your happiness and success. After all, that's your choice in life, and you can do that. But for those of you that write me letters and you want to know, well, what are you doing and why, and how does that work and why, and can you prove that? The answer is, yeah, I can prove it. And here's why I do it, and here's how I do it, and here's why. So let's keep in mind here that it's not left up to me to determine for myself how I'm going to practice the Passover. I wish it was. You know, I've got my own ideas, and I think that my ideas are better than God's. And he's not impressed by my beliefs and practices at all. And he says so very plainly. And in fact, in one place, in Isaiah 1, verse 14, he says he hates our feasts. So he doesn't care much for Christmas, doesn't care much for Easter, the 4th of July, Mother's Day, Father's Day, or Valentine's Day. And he tells us very plainly, he says, I hate them. So if you really want to tick this guy off, you need to practice more of these pagan festivals and holidays. Now, if you wanted to please him, then maybe you ought to be paying attention to what his holy days or his holidays are. In fact, that's what he tells all of us. In Leviticus chapter 23, in the very first verse, he says, these are my holy days. Now, most people would say, well, no, that's wrong. These are the Jewish holy days. So they get that mixed up a little bit. Listen to this. He says, and the Eternal spoke unto Moses, and he said, you speak unto the children of Israel, and you say unto them, concerning the feasts of the Eternal, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts. So this God claims that these feasts are his. Not Jews, not Christians, don't belong to anybody else. They were his idea. He thunk them up all by himself. And he said, these are my feasts, and these are the feasts that I want you to keep. Well, these are the feasts that I want you to keep if you want to participate in my program. Now, most people don't care very much about this program in the Bible. They have a program. It could be the Lutheran program. It could be the Baptist youth program. It could be the Catholic program. I mean, all of these religious people have their programs, which don't have very much in common with, if anything, in common with the scriptural programs. So, now here's the program that God first laid out to Moses when they were still in Egypt. I mean, hell, we were still slaves working for Pharaoh. And it starts in Exodus chapter 12, verse 1, and he says, and the Eternal spoke unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months, and it shall be the first month of the year unto you. Now, he's not talking about January. See, we have a calendar, and our first month of the year starts in the middle of winter. And the calendar, which actually is a misnomer, because there is no calendar in the Bible. None. Zero. Zilch. I hear religious people telling me all the time that there's the sacred calendar of the Bible, or God's calendar. And so I looked it up in the scripture. I couldn't find it anywhere. Now, there's 1,189 chapters in here. I read them all. Looking for calendar. I looked up the word calendar, couldn't find that anywhere. It's like looking for the word rapture, couldn't find rapture anywhere. Now, people have all kinds of religious ideas. I'm not discounting that, and I'm not making fun of you. If you want to believe in the rapture, that's fine. If you want to believe in Easter, that's great. Get after it. But you can't find it in the Bible, and it isn't what the Bible teaches. And so I look at it from the perspective of the Scripture. It's a little odd. I don't deny it. In verse 3, it says, you speak unto all the congregation of Israel and say to them, in the 10th day of this month, they shall take to them every man a lamb, according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for a house. So on the 10th day of this first month, which falls in April, you're to take a lamb. Now, most of you people don't do that. You know, just figure out the last time that you took a lamb on the 10th day of the month. Can you remember that? Yeah, that's what I thought. You have never done that in your lifetime. And you are not likely to do that in your lifetime if you live to be 110. But every year, on the 10th day of the first month, I take a lamb out of the flock and lock it up in a pen. That's a wild custom, I know, but that's what I do. Now, if the household be too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take it according to the number of the souls. Every man according to his eating shall make your count for the lamb. So you take a look at the number of people that are going to do the Passover. Let's say there's 10. And then you say 10, and normally people eat about a pound of meat. Not really. It's about a half a pound, but I try to calculate a pound. So if I was going to have 10 people, then I would have to have a 20-pound lamb so that I could harvest off of it about a half a pound each and end up, you know, with about 5 pounds. Because your lamb, you know, only yields about 50%. And when you're using this lamb in the way that we're going to use it, you can't break any bones on it. And you have to carve it in its whole configuration. You don't get a whole lot off of it. So the instruction here in Exodus 12, verse 4, is to calculate the number of people and the size of the lamb. And for the guy that's never done this before, that's quite a little test, you know. It might take you a couple of years to figure this out. So I'm just telling you ahead of time, you're going to need about a half a pound per person. 10 people need 5 pounds. You need a 20-pound lamb to get 5 pounds off of it, because half of its waist anyway, you know, half of its guts, head, horns, legs, so on. Verse 5, your lamb shall be without blemish. A male of the first year. So it has to be a little boy lamb. Can't use little girl lambs. It's got to be a boy, a male. And it's got to be without blemish. So if it's got an eye that's gouged out or a broken horn or something like that, then, you know, and one of the problems that we have here in America is that we castrate all the lambs and dock them. Dock them means cut their tails off. So here's your lamb without tails and without testicles. And that's a blemish. And so you've got to have your lamb has to be with testicles and with the tail. Isn't that just special? And you shall take it out from the sheep or from the goats. Now you can also use a goat if you want to. And you shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. Okay, so you're going to kill the whole congregation. That is, we all go out and we kill all of our lambs at the same time. There's a time of day that you kill this lamb, and it's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the 14th day of the first month, which is the Passover day. And the reason you kill him about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon is so that you've got time to prepare it and then put it on the spit and then cook it, because it has to be cooked, because it's going to be eaten right after sundown at the end of the 14th day and right at the very beginning of the 15th day. And they shall take of the blood and strike it on the two side posts and on the upper door post of the houses wherein they shall eat it. So you bleed this animal. You know, we bleed them. You cut their throat and it bleeds out into a bowl. Then you take hyssop and you dip it in the bowl of blood, and then you strike it on the lintels and the doorpost. Now, a lintel is the board that goes over the top of the door, and the side posts are on each side. So there's three boards that we're going to strike this blood on. And we do this at each and every door entrance into the house. So if you got a front door and a back door, you do it on two. If you got a front door and a back door and a side door, you do it on three. Here on my house, I've got about 6 doors. Got one here in the greenhouse. Got one here at the back of the house. Got one on the side of the house. 2 on the north side. And then I got one on the east side. And then I got one on the south side. So, you know, there's 5 or 6. So you got to do 5 or 6 doors if you got that many. And then they shall eat the flesh in that night, roasted with fire and unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs shall they eat it. So it has to be roasted with fire. Can't be done in the microwave. Can't be done in your oven. Has to be roasted with fire. And then you eat it with unleavened bread. So that means that Wonder Bread is out of the question. So you have to eat it with unleavened bread. And with bitter herbs. Most people eat lamb with mint jelly. No, you can't eat not. You do not eat it with sweets. You eat it with bitter herbs. Eat it not raw nor sodden. Can't eat it boiled, and you can't eat it raw. It has to be cooked. Has to be cooked with fire. But roasted with fire, his head and his legs, and with the pertinence thereof. So you don't gut the animal. Now, normally, you cut the intestines out of the animal. Now, I was talking to a Messianic Jewish fellow one time, and he said, well, they gut the animal, and then they put the heart and the liver back into the cavity. I guess they sew it up or somehow and put it in there, hold it in there, and then they cook it. Now, there's a scripture right there that tells you not to do that. You're to do it with the pertinence thereof. That's with all of the intestines in it. Now, when I first saw this recipe, I kind of cringed a little bit. I said, uh-oh, you're going to cook this critter on an open spit, on an open fire, with the guts in it. Now, how's that going to work? Well, having never done it before, I didn't know. So I figured, well, this is the recipe. You know, why don't we just follow the recipe and see what turns out? And then it turned out fine. Wasn't any problem with it. And remember, God told us now, you're not to add to this and you're not to take anything away. He told us that in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2. Now, Jesus added a little bit to that. You Christians can follow this. It's in the New Testament. Now, Christians, I should have warned you, I guess, before we started here. You shouldn't be listening to this and you shouldn't be reading this, because Christians are barred from reading the Old Testament. They're barred by their churches and their councils and by their denominations, because the Old Testament is abolished and it's nailed to the cross with Jesus. Jesus didn't know that, and he said so very plainly in Matthew 5:17, but that's Christian philosophy for you. But now you Christians can listen to this. See, Jesus said in Matthew 4, verse 4, he said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. So keep in mind that if that statement's true, if he didn't lie to you, like, which is what most Christians believe, that Jesus was a liar. But assuming that in this case he didn't lie to you and he told you the truth, when he made that statement in Matthew 4, verse 4, not one word of the New Testament had been penned yet. So when he said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, the only scripture that had proceeded out of the mouth of God up to that point in time were the 39 books of the Old Testament, which would include this book here, Exodus. Exodus 12 is where we're at in the Old Testament. So just thought I'd throw that one out there for you. Jesus thought that this might have some bearing, might have some purpose. Verse 10, you shall let nothing of it remain until the morning, and that which remains of it until the morning you shall burn with fire. So you don't gather it up and put it in the refrigerator, because there's leftovers. There's no leftovers from the Passover. You take all of it, put it in the fire, and burn it up. In verse 11, and thus shall you eat it, with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste, because it's the Lord's Passover. Now, there's 52 things here that we have to do. I mean, if you were going to follow this recipe, if you were going to do it the way God told you to do it, he said, you're to eat it with your loins girded, that's with your clothes on, your shoes on your feet, that means you don't take your shoes off, your staff in your hand, so you have to eat this with a stick in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste, because it's the Lord's Passover. So this isn't a leisurely meal where we sit down for five courses. This is a meal that we eat in haste. It's done in about 15 or 20 minutes, right after the sun sets and before it gets dark, and we're done eating. We pick it all up and we throw it in the fire and burn it all. Verse 12, he says, for I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, and I will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment, because I am the Eternal. See, this God here, he's not what do you call that? Euphemistic, but there's a word that they use in trying to get all these religions together. Ecclesiastical, is that the word? No. I'll think of it here in a minute, but you know, in trying to get all these religious people together, you know, the Catholics and the Protestants and everybody, this guy, he's not interested in that at all. He says it's my way or the highway. Doesn't have any tolerance at all for religious free exercise and religious choice, none at all. He's just a dictator. And then in verse 13 he says, "And the blood shall be to you for a token upon the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. And this day shall be unto you for a memorial." You know, we have a day here in America that we call Memorial Day. It's May 30th. Memorial Day. He says, "This is a memorial unto you." It's not a sacrifice, it's a memorial. "And you shall keep it a feast to the eternal throughout your generations. You shall keep it a feast by an ordinance or a statute forever." Now he mentions that three times in this chapter. Three times he says, "You shall do this forever." Now, I don't know how long forever is, but I do know this. Forever isn't up yet. So wherever you are on planet Earth, this still applies and still applies to you. Now that's three times he makes this observation. I'll mention this is number one in verse 14. Then in verse 15 he says, 7 days shall you eat unleavened bread. Even the first day you shall put away leaven out of your houses. For whosoever eats leavened bread from the first day even unto the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. So if you're a Christian, and if during the year you eat leavened bread, 365 days, your soul shall be cut off from Israel. And your name will not be written in the Lamb's Book of Life. How do I know that? Because he just told you right there. Right there. Verse 15, he says, "I will cut that soul off from Israel." And in Revelation, he tells us he's got a book of life. And if your name is not written in his book of life, then you're none of his. Now in verse 16, "In the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and in the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation." This is where you go to church. 2 days you gather together, first and seventh day. "No manner of work shall be done in them, save that which every man must eat, that only may be done of you." So you can cook on these days. I mean, you know, it's kind of like Christmas and Thanksgiving. I mean, you can have a big turkey dinner if you'd like. You don't have to eat mutton, but once a year. And if you don't like mutton, you could eat goat. You can have either one. You can choose. Verse 17, "You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for in this selfsame day have I brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore shall you observe this day in your generations by an ordinance forever." That's the second time. In verse 14 and verse 17, he says, "I want you to do this forever." Most people, they don't believe that. Of course, they don't believe God anyway. They think he's a liar. But they think that Jesus came and did away with us. You don't have to do it forever. You only had to do it up until Jesus came, and then we don't have to do it anymore. That's not the way I read this. Of course, you know, you can read it any way you want to, but it sounds like to me that he wants us to do this forever. And if you could write me a letter and tell me, well, when did forever end? Well, I guess it was when Jesus died. Forever terminated right there with Jesus. Now, I'm on verse 18. I'm going to pause right there and give you my mid-course correction here and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. from the scriptural perspective. That's eight schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults in compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. It's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. I am responding to a letter, kind of a caustic letter, that I received here this past week, an email. The guy said I was a money-grubbing, low-down, no-good, sorry, son of a you-know-what, and that I couldn't figure out the dates for the Passover, for my life depended on it, and I was probably all wrong and all wet. Hell, I wouldn't deny that. So, you know, the world's full of people that are smarter than I am. And I never claimed to be, you know, all that bright. I never said I was the sharpest marble in the drawer. However, I'm a reporter, and I try to report the facts. And sometimes people will write me an email, and they'll say, "Well, Mr. Gordon, I like listening to you, but I disagree with your theology." No, son, I don't have a theology. So if you think that this is coming from me, you got that wrong, dead wrong. See, I couldn't have figured this out, you know, if I'd have lived to be 110. I wasn't that smart to start with. And the guy that thought up this Passover thing over here, he thought that up of him by himself. That didn't have anything to do with me. This idea that you should bring this lamb up on the 10th day of the month, I didn't think that up. That wasn't my idea. Hell, if I was going to do it, I'd bring it up on the 14th day. And this thing of eating this thing, you know, in haste with your shoes on your feet and a staff in your hand. Have you ever tried to eat dinner with a stick in your hand? You wait until you try that trick, son. And I think you're going to... Hey, this Passover thing, I don't know why he did that. But then, it wasn't my deal in life. So, you know, when you say, "I disagree with your theology," get it straight. You're disagreeing with this God's theology. This is his idea. This thing of doing this on the 14th day of the month, hell, if it was up to me, I'd do it on the 18th day of the month. There isn't any reason for me to do it on the 14th day, except this guy told me he wants it done on the 14th. He says, "I want you to kill it and prepare it on the 14th and eat it on the 15th. And he says he wants me to do it from sundown to sundown, from even until even. Hell, if it was up to me, I'd do it from midnight to midnight like everybody else. So next time you get ready to write me a letter and say you disagree with my theology, you know, don't give me the credit for having thought this up, because I'm not that smart. And, you know, if I had my druthers, you know, I'd probably follow along like everybody else." All right, in verse 18, we're in Exodus chapter 12, if you joined us late. Exodus chapter 12, we're talking about Easter. Easter, it's the common name for Passover. You can't find Passover here in Exodus, you can't find Easter here in Exodus 12. It doesn't appear there. It's called the Passover. Passover appears 76 times in the Bible, in case you're wondering. I looked it up, and that's why I'm able to tell you that. I looked it up in a concordance and I counted them all up, 76. 28 in the New Testament, 48 in the Old Testament. Jesus practiced the Passover. Jesus didn't practice Easter. Jesus wasn't a Christian, in case you were wondering. And I'm not running Christians down. You know, you got a good religion. It's an old religion. It's been around a long time. The Christian religion goes back to the Babylonian mystery religion. You people have been doing this for thousands of years. Long before Jesus ever came on the scene, you were practicing Easter and Christmas both. So you've got a long history and a long tradition of these pagan practices. And they're called pagan by this God. I mean, you know, they're holy, righteous, just, and good to you and your modality. But this guy here, and I'm reporting about a different God here. This is a different cat with a different stripe. Verse 18, he says, in the first month, on the 14th day of the month at even, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 and 20th day of the month at even. 7 days shall be no leaven found in your houses. For whosoever eats that which is leavened, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in the land. So whether you're a Vietnamese refugee, came to the United States, or you're a Joe Sixpack born in Albuquerque, New Mexico, law applies to both of you equally. And then in verse 20, he says, you shall eat nothing leavened. In all of your habitation shall you eat unleavened bread. Now that's getting kind of, you know, he's repeated that about 3 or 4 times. You'd think this guy, you know, as he's got his needle stuck in the groove or something, you know. But I think he's emphasizing a point that for 7 days during the year, he does not want you to have any leavening in your house. That means you got to take all the yeast in your house and throw it out. I like that. Maybe you got $25 worth of yeast in your house, and all of a sudden, here it is, the 13th day of the month. Here comes the Passover up here, and you got to throw all this out. One guy said, well, what they did at their place, they tied a string on it and they hung it over the fence in the neighbor's yard. See, just hung it over the fence. So it wasn't on their property. And then after the Passover was done, the Days of Unleavened Bread went over there and pulled the yeast back over on his side of the fence. I thought, now that's pretty innovative. Pretty innovative. I don't do that. I'm not smart like that, so I just throw mine in the garbage. Actually, I take it out and feed it to the chickens, what I do. Get rid of it, and then I go out and buy new leavening, new yeast, you know, after the Days of Unleavened Bread. And then verse 21, then Moses called for all the elders of Israel, and he said unto them, draw out and take you a lamb according to your families and kill the Passover. You have to kill this animal. For most people, that's pretty traumatic. When we do that here at the school, of course, this is a farm. You know, we have animals here. We butcher quite often. And when I kill the Passover lamb, some of you city people over there can't handle that, and so you puke. They get sick. They get nauseated. They cry. They get real sad. I just wanted to point out that before you can eat a McDonald's hamburger, the cow had to die. I just thought I'd share that with you. All cows die before they're turned into hamburger. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop. Now, this is verse 21. You shall take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that's in the basin and strike the lintel and the two side posts with the blood that's in the basin. And none of you shall go out of the door of his house until the morning. So, once we go in, after the Passover, we go in the house, we don't come back out until the sun comes up the next morning. For the Eternal will pass through and smite the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood upon the lintel and on the two side posts, the Eternal will pass over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come in into your houses to smite you. And you shall observe this thing for an ordinance or a statute to you and to your sons forever. Now that's the third time. Remember I said 3 times in this chapter, he said, I want you to do this forever. If there's one thing about this guy, he repeats himself more than once. This is the third time. Verse 25, it shall come to pass when you be come into the land which the Eternal shall give you. That's the United States and Canada and Australia. according as he has promised that you shall keep this service. So you Australians and New Zealanders and all of you Hollanders and Frenchmen and Canadians and Americans, you're supposed to do this every year, forever. It's called the Passover. Verse 26, it'll come to pass when your children shall say unto you, what mean you by this service? You know, when your children say, hey, Dad, what's going on here? Why are you doing this? Verse 27, that you shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and he delivered our houses. And the people bowed the head and worshipped. And the children of Israel went away and did as the Eternal had commanded, and Moses and Aaron, and so did they. So on this very first Passover, now it's about there's about 3.5 million of these people. Based upon the size of a lamb, you know, figuring about a dozen people, you know, can eat off of one lamb, I took 3,500,000. And I divided that by about 12 people. And I came up to 291,666 lambs were killed on that first Passover. And round numbers, about 300,000 lambs for 3.5 million people. So here in the United States, we got about 300 million people. You know, so if you took 300 million and 300, and you divided that by 12, you'd need about 25 million lambs. Round numbers, 25 million lambs. That would be really great for the sheep industry if we practiced the Passover. You know, kind of like eating fish on Friday was a big boost to the fishing industry. If we would do that with lambs and keep the Passover every year, it'd be a big boon for the sheep raisers of America. And in verse 28, he says, the children of Israel went away and did as the Eternal had commanded Moses and Aaron. So in this first Passover, they all did that. It came to pass that at midnight, the Lord smote all the Egyptians firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne, unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, that all the firstborn and all the firstborn of cattle. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all of his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not at least one dead. There wasn't a house anywhere. Well, just take a look around you. Think about that for a minute. How many firstborn do you have in your family? For instance, I'm a firstborn. My dad was a firstborn. Now, my granddad, Gordon, he wasn't a firstborn. He's about fourth. My grandmother, she was firstborn. Yeah, firstborn, granny was. Let's see, who else? My uncle Lyle was a firstborn. I mean, you know, I could just look around in my family and pick out the firstborns, you know. And, yeah, there would be a lot of crying. There'd be a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, wouldn't there? Came to pass that at midnight the Lord smote all the Egyptians, the firstborn. Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all of his servants and all the Egyptians. There was a great cry in the land of Egypt. He called for Moses and Aaron by night, and he said, rise up and get you forth from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Eternal, as you have said. Also take your flocks and your herds, as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also. And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people, that they might send them out of the land in haste, because they said, we be all dead men. And the people took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading troughs, being bound up in their clothes upon their shoulders. And the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they borrowed, or they spoiled the Egyptians, of jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment. Hey, when they left, they scored a hit there. And the Eternal gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they lent unto them such things as they required. And they spoiled the Egyptians. And the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses, that's a town, to Succoth, about 600,000 on foot that were men beside children. The reason they figured there was about 3.5 million, well, you take 600,000 men, and well, there's about half the population are also women. So there'd be about 600,000 women. So that'd be about 1,200,000 or about 1,000,002. And then they just kind of extrapolated forward and said, well, how many children do you think they might have? They might have had, you know, three children each. So, you know, if you had three, four children on top of 1,000,002, then you'd come out to about 3.5 million people. It could have been more than that, could have been less, but, you know, round numbers, 3.5 million. And a mixed multitude went up also with them in flocks and herds, even very much cattle. So there was a mixed multitude. There was a bunch of people. You know, there's probably some Vietnamese there, probably some Chinese, maybe some American Indians. You know, a few odd strangers in the bunch. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they brought forth out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not tarry, neither had they prepared for themselves any victual. Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years, or they completed 430 years, from Abraham until the day they left. It came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the selfsame day it came to pass, that all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night to be much observed unto the Eternal for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is the night of the Eternal to be observed of all the children of Israel and their generations. This is Independence Day. This is our 4th of July for those of us that are Hebrews. You know, Americans, they keep the 4th of July, and that's their Independence Day. In France, it's the 14th of July. That's their Bastille Day. Every country has an Independence Day, a day that they set aside to commemorate their independence. Well, the Israelites aren't any different. And people who are Israelites and commemorate or practice the Passover are actually celebrating their independence. And the Eternal said unto Moses and Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Passover, there shall no stranger eat thereof. But every man's servant that is bought for money, when you have circumcised him, then shall he eat thereof. So if you're a stranger in the land, that is, you're not a native Israelite, you know, you're a Vietnamese, then what we do is we require that you be circumcised, and then you can participate as a stranger. A foreigner and a hired servant shall not eat thereof, and in one house shall it be eaten. You shall not carry forth aught of the flesh abroad out of the house, neither shall you break a bone thereof. So on this Passover lamb, you can't break any bones of it. Don't cut the tail off. You know, don't cut the legs off. The whole thing goes on the spit. And I've got a cinder block or a concrete block box. It's 8 feet long, about 3 feet wide. And I got a pole, about an inch and a half steel pole, and I welded a handle on the end of it, and I put four straps of iron across it. And then I put a piece of wire, heavy gauge wire, on the bottom of it. And then I wire the animal onto that flat piece of wire. It's about 2 by 6 feet long. And then I put another wire over the top of it. And then I wire these two pieces of wire together so that I've got the animal encased in wire. Because as it cooks, the meat falls off the bones and it falls into the fire. I learned that the very first year I did this, that you got to have some way to hold that thing together, because as it cooks, you know, it falls apart. So that's the configuration that I use. Now, sometimes people want to come here to Passover. You know, Passover is kind of like Christmas. And it is true that I do invite a few people here for the Passover, but it's not hundreds, you know, 20 maybe, something on that order. And as you can see here, you know, this is done with little groups of people, you know, in your community, all over America. this April, this Passover coming up, which this year occurs on April the 2nd. In the evening is when it begins, when the sun goes down on April the 2nd until the sun goes down on April the 3rd is the 14th day of the first month. That's the Passover day. And you eat this Passover, you cook it on the 14th, and as soon as the sun goes down on the 14th begins the 15th. So you actually eat it on the 15th. And the death angel, when he comes over, he doesn't come over on Passover day. He comes over at midnight on the first day of unleavened bread. That's when the death angel came over. If you just follow the chronology here, you know it isn't too difficult to figure that out. Passover and days of unleavened bread. It's an 8-day festival. And he goes on to say here that all the congregation of Israel shall keep it. And verse 48, and then, or when, a stranger shall sojourn with you and shall keep the Passover to the eternal, let all of his males be circumcised, and then let him come near and keep it, and he shall be as one that is born in the land, for no uncircumcised person shall eat thereof. So if you're not circumcised, you ought not to eat this Passover. No uncircumcised person shall eat thereof. One law shall be to him that is homeborn, and unto the stranger that sojourns among you. So you have one law here. It applies to everybody, whether you're a stranger or born here. Got to be circumcised in order to eat the Passover. And thus did all the children of Israel, as the Eternal commanded Moses and Aaron, so did they. And it came to pass the selfsame day that the Eternal did bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt by their armies. Then in chapter 13, there's a little bit more to be said over here. He says, and the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, you sanctify unto me all the firstborn, whatsoever opens the womb among the children of Israel, both of man and of beast, it is mine. And Moses said unto the people, remember this day in which you came out from Egypt, out of the house of bondage. For by strength of hand the Eternal brought you out from this place. There shall no leavened bread be eaten. This same day came you out in the month Abib. So there's the story of the very first Passover. Now there's 52 things there in this Passover that you should be alerted to, or you should be aware of. You remember I said that there was 52 things here. Let me just run them by you here. In verse 3, you shall buy the lamb, or separate the lamb out of your flock on the 10th day. Every man according to his eating, a male lamb, less than a year old, without blemish, it may be a goat, keep it until the 14th day. You kill the lamb in the afternoon, which is called evening. The whole assembly shall kill it, that is, cut its throat. Take the blood and strike it on the doorpost, sides, and the lintel top of your houses, where they eat it. You shall eat it in the night portion of the day, roasted with fire, with unleavened bread, with bitter herbs. Do not eat it raw. Do not eat it boiled. It must be roasted with fire, that is, barbecued. With his head on his carcass, with his legs on the carcass, and you do not cut the intestines out of the lamb. You roast it with the intestines. You eat all of the lamb. You leave nothing until the morning. Whatever is left must be burned in the fire. All the leftovers go into the fire and are burned up. You eat it with your clothes on. You eat it with your shoes on. You eat it in haste. You eat it with your staff in your hand. The Passover is a memorial. It's not a sacrifice. We're not sacrificing the animal now. Well, I guess you could call it a sacrifice for the animal, but it's a memorial. You keep the Passover forever. You do it by statute. You do it from generation to generation, and then you teach it to your children. You put out all of your leavening on the 14th day, and then you eat unleavened bread on the 15th through the 21st days. 7 days we eat unleavened bread. And anyone that doesn't is cut off from our assembly who eats leavened bread is to be cut out. The first day is a holy convocation. The seventh day is a holy convocation. That's when you gather yourselves together and go to church. And then you do not work on the first and the seventh days. Those are two Sabbath days. And you can prepare meals on these two holy days. And the Feast of Unleavened Bread is a statute. Now, this feast is to be kept from generation to generation. You keep this feast forever. On the 14th day at evening, you eat unleavened bread for 7 days. No one is to eat leavening for 7 days. You take hyssop, dip it in the blood, and strike it on the doorposts and lintels. You do not go out of your house until morning. This is a statute forever. The Passover is a service. And then when your children ask what all this means, you're to tell them it's the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover. Okay? How do you like that? 52 things in the recipe. 52 things you have to do. Now, this guy that wrote me this kind of obscene letter said that I didn't know that I had the wrong date for keeping the Passover. So I thought that's pretty important. How do you calculate the date for the Passover? Do you calculate the date from the equinox, or the dark of the moon, or the crescent moon, or the full moon, or from the barley ears, or from some other modality? There's about as many ideas out there as to how to calculate the Passover as there are people to espouse them. So there's your way, and then there's the scriptural way. The Bible is not silent as to how to calculate the Passover, but it doesn't have anything to do with the calendar. Calculating the Passover isn't done with the calendar, it's done with soil temperature. Isn't that bizarre? Yeah, it has to do with soil temperature. It has to do with the temperature of the ground as the barley ears grow. And we'll take that up next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we'll analyze this thing from the Scripture. How do you calculate the first day of the new year, which, you know, is commonly known as New Year's Day? And then when you figure that out, you can count 14 days to the Passover, and then the 15th day, the first day of unleavened bread, and the 7th day of the days of unleavened bread. And in fact, now with this much information, we can calculate the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, and the Last Great Day, because all of the holy days are calculated through the agricultural process. Doesn't have anything to do with the calendar. All right, I'm about out of time, so let me give you a final reminder here that you're listening to, or have been listening to, The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.